Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. Orders for durable goods go up. First-time jobless claims go down. What's not to like? Major consumer goods. Democrats say they're going to use the reconciliation process to pass health care. Finally, there's proof that Bartlett producers aren't the only ones who can grow a pear. On the other hand, the House passed almost unanimously a renewal of the Patriot Act without adding privacy protections. Way to go, kids. Full body scanners will soon be installed in two airports, a few in Boston and several in Chicago. Smile. The TSA guy is smiling. Why shouldn't you? A Florida woman was shot as she walked into a bar. No, this isn't the beginning of a joke. She was accidentally shot by a man who was aiming at someone else. My love handle saved my life, she said. A study in Sweden finds that whether a woman has a heart attack after age 50 is tied to how many children she gives birth to. The number 2 is best. The California Attorney General's office has subpoenaed the records of the state's 7 largest health insurance companies to see if they illegally denied legitimate claims. They wouldn't do that, would they? Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All that, news of the weird, a terrific guest, not that last week's wasn't fabulous, Larry Hancock will be joining us to talk some more about his book and the subjects it covers, the book called Someone Would Have Talked About the Cover-Up Surrounding the Assassination of John F. Kennedy. But first, I wanted to remind you, members of our ever-increasing audience, thank you, about the book. The book is the book I wrote called Mobile Millionaire, and it has a relatively new site. It's now several weeks old. It can be found at mobilemillionaire.blogspot.com, and the book deals with, among other things, investing in mobile homes for the small investor as a way of earning cash, improving income, and increasing assets. The news has come out in the last few days that a famous real estate investor and author has gotten into some financial difficulty. That was in part because the properties he bought were overly leveraged, that is, low cash in and high-level loans, and then, of course, property values went down. With mobile homes, that frankly doesn't happen, assuming you know how to buy them right and how to rent them out. And the book tells you all about that. So the book is called Mobile Millionaire, but it could be called Poor Dad, Sensible Dad. If you want to take a look at that again, it's mobilemillionaire.blogspot.com. And now for some of the details on the news items we talked about. The economy was first up. Orders for durable goods are up. I believe that's for the first time in several months. The first-time jobless claims went down, which is a good sign, of course, but at the same time, it's not really indicative of the economy doing well in the long run, since that, as we've said before, will go up and down, as will the broader unemployment index. The Democrats met with the Republicans today. For those of you who didn't see that spectacle, and I did not, they talked and they each restated their positions and nobody made any changes. So the Speaker of the House, Harry Reid, so long as he has a Senate seat to deal with and is leader of the Senate, he is talking about, and they have apparently decided, they're going to use the so-called reconciliation process, because by making the changes by way of reconciliation so that the House and Senate bill come closer together, they will be able to pass a health care bill, which won't be everything that some people want and will be more than nothing and more than the Republicans want, which is less than nothing. That process will occur because it doesn't take 60 votes in the Senate. It only takes 51, and they think they can get that. So if they forget about all the Republicans and Joe Lieberman, but I repeat myself, they should be able to pass health care legislation, which would be obviously a great thing. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but it's going to happen pretty soon. The Senate previously passed, and then the House of Representatives today sent a bill on to President Obama for signature, which he will undoubtedly sign. We'll talk more about that in just a second, but I wanted to remind you, or alert you for the first time if you're a first-time listener, that our phone number is available for you to call in and talk about any of the subjects we've discussed or anything we haven't, with the exception of religion and knitting. But you're welcome to call in at 347-994-3796. This gives me a chance to talk for a moment about a pet peeve of mine. You will notice I didn't say 1 before the 347. Anytime you're dialing out of your area code, you have to dial a 1. I know that you all know that, but can you tell me, please, why it is that when someone advertises a product or service and there is a toll-free number, an 800 number, they say, so call 1-800 and the rest of the phone number. We all know we have to dial 1. Just say 800. It really won't make any difference. By the way, on some phones, such as cell phones or Vonage phones and perhaps other VoIP phones, you don't have to dial the 1 first. But presumably those who have those phones are sophisticated enough to know that no matter what the commercial says, you don't have to dial a 1. So if you are outside the 347 area code, as I am, and you wish to dial into the show either during the first 30 minutes or the latter 30 minutes, you can feel free to do so at 347-994-3796. Larry Hancock will be joining us in the latter half hour, about, if my calculations are right, about 26 minutes from now, or 27 minutes from now, and he will be joining us and talking about his book and other areas around the subject of the Kennedy assassination. So if you would prefer to wait till then to join us, ask him some questions, that's perfectly fine, or if you wish to call in the now, that's likewise okay. Or if you just like to sit back and listen, that's fine too, and if you're listening to us in archive, please don't call, you'll be wasting your time. In any event, we were talking about the Patriot Act. Now, there are a number of things about the Patriot Act probably everybody would support. I can't think of what they are, but that's really beside the point. The fact is that the Patriot Act was passed following the attack on September 11, 2001, which occurred on George Bush's watch. That's right. And they always say that no terrorist acts occurred on George Bush's watch. How about 9/11? That was something, huh? And not to mention the attack in Yemen. And also Richard Reeves, the shoe bomber, that was also on Bush's watch. In any event, the Patriot Act was passed to avoid further terrorist acts, which it hasn't done, but as far as we know. But additionally, it has a number of things which cause or could cause invasions of privacy. The Democrats in the House and Senate did talk about the possibility of adding some privacy protections in the act before they renewed it. And, of course, they caved into the Republican new majority of 41 and didn't pass that. So it's going to the president to be renewed as is, and the president will undoubtedly sign it so he doesn't look weak against terrorism. This is especially true in light of the terrorist trials that are going to take place in civilian courts, which is, by the way, where we normally try criminals. So that's really not that unusual. Any event, let's go on to some other things. The full-body scanners are going to be installed into airports. Supposedly, they can't identify the people they're looking at, and they can't see the faces of those who are being scanned. Which, of course, begs the question, if you don't know who it is you're looking at and you find something, how are you going to figure out who it is? Unless you strip search everybody in the line who's gone through the scanner. None of this makes a lot of sense to me, but perhaps I'm using too much common sense. The reality is I don't think it's a terrible idea that they should have full-body scanners because I don't think it's that big a deal that people's bodies are seen by inspectors in order to protect against terrorism. I don't think that, if some of the TSA guys get a thrill, okay. But the only bad part about it is they decided to put in these full-body scanners after the underwear bomber from Nigeria was on a plane and his act was thwarted, despite the fact that he got his explosives through the screening without the full-body scanners. There are experts, however, who say that the body scanners would not have found the explosives in his underwear. Of course, you know, I should say this is a very male issue, because most men think that there are fireworks in their underwear. I don't know exactly what that means, but here you are. The story about this woman who got shot and said her love handle saved her life. That's right. They saved her life at 30 so that she could have a heart attack at 35 and die. She mentioned to reporters, that, by the way, really happened. When she went into this bar, she was shot, and she was shot in the little extra load of lard that she was carrying on her body, and somebody, a cop or a doctor, told her that the existence of that fat, since she was shot, saved her because it didn't go and attack any more vital organs, not including her brain, apparently. She says that now, as much as she's been trying to lose weight without success, since the love handle saved her life, she really said this, I'm going to try to get as big as possible. If she looks like a lot of the people I see at Walmart, she'll save herself from an attack by a howitzer. But at least she's alive to talk about it, and I suppose that we should all be glad for that. And Lord knows her heart's in the right place, which is what we usually say about people who are stupid. But, you know, that's not exclusively true. Lots of us have our hearts in the right place on our sleeve and are not dumb. Okay, we try to please everybody here. The Office of the California Attorney General, the Attorney General of California is, anyone? Jerry Brown, the former governor of California and former mayor of Oakland, is the Attorney General of the state of California, who is, by the way, running for governor. And they have subpoenaed the records of the largest health insurance carriers, as I mentioned at the top of the show, to see if they have denied legitimate claims, which apparently in California is against the law, as opposed to normal operating procedure in the rest of the country. So that's the plan there. We mentioned we have News of the Weird, and we do have a couple of interesting stories. Not like the original news stories were not all that normal, but it's been a slow news week if you're not Tiger Woods. There was a show, incidentally, on one of the Sirius stations where at the end of the show they played their closing music, and behind it they played apologies of a bunch of men apologizing for having affairs. Tiger Woods was one of them, and they played the Elliot Spitzer recording. And after that, they played a recording of a congressman whose name I cannot recall, who was apologizing in public for having had an affair with a man. And, why he apologized in public, I don't know. The same thing's true of Tiger Woods. I mean, they should, and, you know, probably apologize to their wives. Beyond that, what difference does it make? By the way, in case it's not obvious, I am doing the show tonight with a cold, and that's hardly news, but there may be a time I have to put the microphone, or more correctly, the telephone, which acts as a mic for our show, down for a moment. If I do that, you will hear what is commonly called dead air, which is a sin, but in regular radio, they have the advantage of being able to switch to a commercial in the event that they have to cough or sneeze or go down the hall or something. So I won't go down the hall, but in a moment, in fact, I am going to put the phone down. So you just talk among yourselves for a moment, okay? I'll be right back. That sound effect, by the way, was false. I didn't really blow my nose. That was just a sound effect we imported for the purpose of making it sound like I did. It was really rather effective and true to life, don't you think? Wanted to also remind you, if you're in business and have a website, first, congratulations. But if you're not getting the traffic to your website that you'd like, it's something that can be changed. You don't have to go through an expensive search engine optimization process. Instead, you can blog. You can certainly blog on your own. If you don't know what blogging is, it is essentially like a newspaper column on the web. That's one way of doing it and looking at it. And you can write on your subject and so on. And there's a way of doing it which will cause more traffic to go to your website. If you're not someone who feels comfortable with writing, I have great news for you. Go to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com, and you will see there an opportunity to have me blog for you. And without going into enormous detail right now, I will tell you it's inexpensive, it's effective, and it will drive more traffic to your website almost no matter what we say, but we'll also go ahead and write the content that you want to have on there. The effect of all that will be to drive more traffic to your website, and if you have more traffic to your website, guess what? You have more business. So that's a possibility, and again, I wanted to invite you to look at jeffonblogging, all one word, .blogspot, all one word, .com. That's the story there. We're going to go to News of the Weird right now, but before we talk about those stories, let me remind you first off that in about 10 minutes or so, Larry Hancock will be joining us. And if you'd like to call, the number is 347-994-3796. News of the Weird. The first story is not really odd. It's more sad, but it's kind of shocking. Instead of telling you about it, let me tell you the story. CBS News recently did a story on the charity known as Feed the Children. And this is the charity that advertises for only $8 a month, you can, you know, help feed a child and so forth. It's been bleeding people for a number of years, but it turns out that they brought in about $1 million to feed kids in Haiti following the earthquake there. The way they work the percentages, if they did in fact bring in $1 million, they'll be keeping about $770,000 for administrative expenses. The entire operation, according to CBS, of Feed the Children in Haiti consisted of three doctors working on several dozen kids and no one being fed. Now, obviously, if children are injured or in pain or ill from the results of the earthquake, you want to have them treated. But that particular group is holding on to about 77% of all funds contributed for so-called administrative expenses. That would include salary, advertising to get people to send more money, of course, and all the rest of that. And other part of the story was that the CEO of Feed the Children and his adult daughter are involved in a family feud, presumably over the money, but they also live very well. Maybe that's part of the administrative expenses. But that's the situation. So be aware of Feed the Children. If you believe CBS, it is a news organization. Presumably they did vet the story. Feed the Children charity is not doing that much with your money that you wanted done. There are a lot of good charities out there, if you exclude the Salvation Army, but there are a lot of good charities out there that can do better with your money. And incidentally, before I get on to the other news of the weird, let me mention why I made the caustic remark about Salvation Army. I was told by a social worker who interned there that in order to get help, if you are in desperate need of help and you go to the Salvation Army, I'm assuming this is true, but if it's not and somebody knows, you can let me know, that in order to get the help, you first have to sit through a religious service. That's what the word salvation refers to in the Salvation Army's name. Outside of one's own belief in religion, or lack of belief in religion, if someone wants to offer the services, that is, religious services, I say, you know, let them, of course. This is America. It's a free country. They can offer anything they want. But to talk about getting charitable dollars from people who aren't aware of the fact that a requirement of getting aid if you are a person who is poor or down on his or her luck is that you sit through an evangelical religious service is a species of fraud in one sense. And on the other hand, it's kind of like hitting someone over the head with a violin to persuade them that music is beautiful. You will listen to this service, you will attend it, and then we'll give you food and clothing and so forth. Frankly, I can think of better ways for your charitable dollar to be spent. But again, that's an opinion. your mileage may vary. To another story, before I get on the soapbox for another hour. On a recent Saturday, a 30-contestant nude sled race was held in a small German town. Unfortunately for the people who were trying to get around in their city, it drew a much larger crowd than anticipated. The community was overrun with traffic as 14,000 people showed up to watch the 30 naked sled racers. That sounds like fun. Let's see. One more story. This is good. A Florida law says that any person who shall, in this state, while wearing any mask, hood, or device whereby any portion of the face is so hidden, concealed, or covered as to conceal the identity of the wearer, if they enter upon or be or appear upon or within the public property of any municipality or county of the state. Okay, basically what it said is you can't appear like that anywhere, right? Okay. And that explains what the cop was thinking when he arrested Matthew David Lopez last week. See, Mr. Lopez was walking down a public street wearing a clown mask and an orange wig. And the police officer thought that this was a violation of that law, which it may well have been, and therefore arrested him. I hate to think what would happen about the with that police officer, were he in a jurisdiction they talked about this years ago about weird laws where it was illegal to shoot at a horse from a moving train. So, and you can understand why, of course, because it's not really fair. But you can't go around with a mask, hood, or a device where any portion of your face is hidden. So if you're a clown, stay away from Florida. Presumably they have enough of those folks running for governor. Okay, we have about 7 or 8 minutes, or maybe less, I hope, about 5 minutes before Larry Hancock joins us. If you wish to join us before that, again, the number is 347-994-3796. A quick question for you to think about is, in spite of my being ill at the moment, whatever happened to swine flu? I haven't heard about swine flu in the news lately, and I expect that part of the reason for that is because the pandemic that was supposed to take place really hasn't, or didn't. Now we are coming into, not until winter do we come into flu season, right? There's supposed to be another wave. I'm being told by my health expert, who is also my wife, and a nurse, that there's supposed to be another wave of the swine flu coming into sight. So they are trying like mad to get people to be vaccinated against this. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with the vaccine companies possibly losing money if you don't get it. And we'll be right back. Another moment of empty air, or dead air. I'll be right back with you. I want to thank our sound effects expert, who has joined the show tonight, for these off-mic noises, and I apologize to you for that. I will say that I have a cold, and I almost never get them, but the combination of some unusual stress and a day over the weekend when I didn't take my usual regimen of vitamin C contributed to my getting this. And I don't know if most of you experience this when you get cold, but I find I'm really ticked off because I don't like getting cold, mostly because it's annoying, not because it feels terrible. In any event, the swine flu epidemic or pandemic has just not happened. Part of this is a case where the health experts attempt to guess what's going to happen, and they clearly attempt to preclude a lot of people getting sick who otherwise might, if in fact an epidemic takes place. So you can't really fault them, but there was a lot of panic for no apparent reason. Another item that came out in the news, by the way, speaking of health, is the astonishing number of United States service members who have served in Iraq and who have been injured. An astonishing 97% of all of the folks in our military who have been injured in Iraq have survived. This is the largest number, as you might imagine, of any war, and it's as a result of improvements in battlefield medicine, which is terrific. The only downside is, of course, is that a lot of those folks are coming back with pretty bad injuries and some disabilities. That said, there's also a wave of these folks who are experiencing symptoms which normally only happen with concussions, even if they've not received one. In other words, they weren't right there and present when there was an explosive occurrence, but they may have been near one. And normally that won't cause a concussion, and there's no evidence of a concussion, but they're acting as if they have some fairly serious brain injuries. And that's being examined. It has been for about the last year and a half, at least. They're very concerned about that, and they're trying to figure out a way to prevent that from happening. They're wearing helmets, so that is not by itself the problem. And in fact, the helmets that they're using have been a great solution in the sense that if they are in an explosion, the helmets tend to save them from dying because previously those explosions would have caused sufficiently severe injuries to the brain and somebody would have died. That's not happening, but they are having things like memory loss and depression and all kinds of things that are much more common when there's been an actual brain injury. So they're investigating that. And of course, we are creating a large number of people by our participation in that war and the Afghanistan war, of people who are going to come back here with some severe physical disabilities, which is obviously highly unfortunate. Of course, it's better than them dying, but what would be better still is if we weren't there and weren't causing the death or injury. We have just a minute or two before Larry is scheduled to join us. That's Larry Hancock, the author of Someone Would Have Talked, of the story of the cover-up of the Kennedy assassination. We also will spend a minute, until Larry calls in, talking briefly about the fact that, the birth rate. The number of children that a woman has will help determine whether she is less likely or more likely to have a heart attack after she hits age 50. As you may know, after menopause, women are as prone to heart attacks as men are, largely because of lack of estrogen. And they did a study in Sweden which determined that how many children a woman has also ties into whether she's more or less likely to have a heart attack. It turns out that the perfect number is 2. If you have 1, you're a little bit more likely to have a heart attack after age 50 than you are if you have 2. And the worst number seems to be 5, although they have not yet tested Mrs. Duggar. She's had 18 now. Is it 18? 19 children. 18 and a half if you count the fact that the latest one was a preemie, rather small. But still, 19 children. And one would assume that she might be either at great risk or no risk. I don't imagine she experiences a lot of stress in her life because, I was about to say a cruel thing. So I'll skip that. But her heart's in the right place. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, you would think that when the 19th child in particular is premature and although seems to be recovering, was born rather unhealthy, that you would perhaps think, you know, maybe it's time to stop. The reason that they're not stopping, as I understand it, is because they're going to have as many children as God is going to give them. And, you know, who can blame them, really? And besides that, it probably has nothing to do with whether they have sex. So it's a matter of what God decides to give them. So she may be in a situation where after age 50 she could be in trouble. Of course, after age 50 she may still be having children. There are stories of women having children well beyond that. So clearly we don't know. While we're waiting for Larry to join us, if you would care to talk about anything else, feel free to do that. The number is 347-994-3796. And that's basically it. Since Larry seems to be running a little late, let me go ahead and talk to you about something else. That basically is vitamin supplements that can help you lose weight. Now, that may sound strange, and I'm not selling the vitamin supplements, so I have no dog in that race, so to speak. But let me talk to you about a couple of things. First off, if you are having trouble losing weight, in part because you seem to always be hungry, and then you obviously are going to eat, one of the things that you might want to consider is simple, or perhaps as simplistic as it sounds, is to start taking a multivitamin each day. Now, that may sound like that would be meaningless and pointless and everything, but the fact is that it really isn't, because what happens is that one of the reasons you're hungry all the time is because you are not getting adequate nutrition and there are adequate vitamins. The result of that is that if you take a multivitamin, you will probably be more likely to lose weight because you won't be so hungry. The other thing I was going to suggest to you is cayenne pepper supplements. Because they tend to raise the body's temperature, they tend to burn off weight, and that's something else for you to consider after consulting with your health provider, your primary health provider. I think Larry may be on the line. Larry, are you there? Hello? Is someone? No, somebody called in and we lost them. I thought it might be Larry, but it was not he. Caller, if you want to call back in, whether you were Larry or not, please feel free to do that. I know you were in the 580 area, but wherever you were, feel free to call back in. You are listening to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman, and one of the reasons we're speaking of everything now is because we're waiting for our scheduled guest. We were talking about diet and vitamin supplements. The reason that cayenne is helpful to you, as I was starting to say, is because it tends to increase your metabolism on some level, which is going to make it easier to lose weight than if you don't have something like that in your system. As said, you want to talk to your healthcare provider because there are certain prescription drugs which, if you're taking, will tend to be interfered with, if you will, by the cayenne. Specifically, if you're taking any drug which is a blood thinner, that could be problematic. Likewise, and a totally separate subject than weight loss, is if you are experiencing low-level depression, you have probably heard that an herb that's good for that is St. John's wort, and it's true. And I'll tell you about another one for depression in just a moment. The problem with St. John's wort is not a big problem for most people, but if you're taking a blood thinner, St. John's wort will also tend to thin your blood. So that could have obviously a negative effect by making your blood too thin. So nothing wrong with St. John's wort for most people, but if you're taking a blood thinner, you certainly want to skip that. That basically is the situation there in terms of that. If we would have a much better healthcare system in this country, in my view, if when you went to see a healthcare provider, your first provider were, in fact, an herbalist or a naturopath. And we're going to ask you to hold with us for 1 second while we provide some more sound effects. Hello, and welcome back. With, again, great thanks to the sound effects person. If we had a naturopath or herbalist be the first person that someone saw, we would save a lot of money on healthcare, both as individuals and as a country. And the reason for the latter should be fairly clear. A lot of the healthcare that is provided to people in this country is paid for by the government already, Medicaid, Medicare, and so forth. So when that happens, and you're getting drugs from the get-go, that's obviously more expensive than vitamin supplements would be. And let's see. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
There you go. Are you there?
I am. Yes, it is.
Glory be. Yeah. I lost you the first time there, huh?
I know. I tried to get in a couple of times, and it dropped off for some reason.
Well, I don't know, but welcome to the show now. That's
probably
the important thing
me,
is you're here now.
You betcha.
Okay, well, hopefully we won't drop you again. Larry Hancock is the author of Someone Would Have Talked, the story of the cover-up surrounding the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and basically that story. And Larry was with us 2 weeks ago, and we started talking about the book, and I thought we had a lot more to cover, and I'm sure we do. Talk to us about, did you get a good response from your appearance? Did anybody say they had heard you?
I did. Several of the folks that visit our subject matter forums on this commented and really appreciated actually getting a chance to hear it on radio.
Okay, good. Well, I what I was really wondering about is if everybody told you, as they told me, that you were terrific.
Oh, well, I guess so. They wouldn't tell me anything else, of course. They're nice people.
That's right. Okay, well, I wanted to tell you first and our audience that I have just finished, except for the epilogue, a book on Jack Kennedy called An Unfinished Life by Robert Dalek, and I think I shared with you a couple of weeks ago. Dalek is a fairly well-known historian and was also a professor of mine in my freshman year at UCLA. And when he finishes the book and he's talking about the assassination, which he touches on actually fairly briefly, he says that the real problem is that Americans cannot tolerate the fact that sometimes bad things happen for no apparent reason, and they don't accept the fact that Oswald was the lone assassin, although he clearly was. Dalek is a smart guy, but obviously in this case, unfortunately, wrong. Give us your reaction to what I'm indicating he said, if you would.
Well, and I'm familiar with that statement. That's a general response that we run into from him and on other occasions. I guess the problem that we face is if you just look at the common information that's available to you, if you just read the Warren Commission report, if you just look at a few of the television specials, that seems quite reasonable because the amount of
sure.
information you have is just... Our problem is until you get into an almost obsessive level of detail, you don't have enough detail
yeah.
to evaluate it. And when you do, you become obsessive. So, you get written off.
I was going to say, and then you're one of them, they're conspiracy theorists.
It's sort of a catch-22.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things you hear all the time is about, conspiracy theorists, blah, blah, blah. And the problem is that it's not a theory. There are conspiracies, and there was one here.
And we have so much more information. I think most of the people, Jeff, that, again, take the view that he's taken are working off the sort of information that they were familiar with that perhaps they got at the time shortly following the assassination or in the following few years, and there's just so much more information available to us now that they probably haven't seen.
Right. Talk to us about some of that. Tell us what some of that information is.
Well,
we didn't cover it a couple of weeks ago.
Most of the information has really come out over the last decade. The JFK mm-hmm. Records Release Act after the movie JFK, the Assassinations
right.
Record Review Board, which allowed access to, collected and allowed access to hundreds of thousands of pages of documents. A lot of folks actually think that we're still waiting for some mysterious date where all of the records will be released, and that actually changed with that Record Act, and we started getting access to them in the late 90s. And so that's
mm-hmm.
that's one of the things that's made a big difference. But another thing that's made a big difference is because of that act, a lot of people that were uncomfortable that were about talking, people that had been in the autopsy room, people that had been
right.
basically people that had seen and heard things that made them uncomfortable, just were uncomfortable about talking in general about it, and that legislation convinced a lot of them that they could finally get some things off their chest.
Right. And what have those people essentially said?
Well, a lot of them have to do with, and we touched on this last time, not so much the conspiracy per se. I could get into a few people that have talked about that, but more with the what I would call containment, suppression, management of evidence,
right.
basically the process by which the lone nut, the lone gunman scenario was
right.
derived. And we now we've got a very detailed, timeline of who did what to create that scenario and maintain it, and how a lot of evidence was managed, and possibly for what reasons it happened. But, for example, it's kind of interesting to see the FBI agents who were present at the autopsy and taking notes and recording
right.
it in great detail be interviewed and come back and literally say, no, what is in that report and what the doctors are saying and what the Warren Commission said, it's just not what we saw. We just,
right.
it's not there. And that's, we didn't, it's not what we saw. That's not what we heard. If that story came about, came about after we left.
Talk to me and us about why the autopsy discrepancies are so important.
Well, and I think this is something you raised last time when you said that you were interested in talking about the shooters. Well, it's virtually
right.
impossible to talk about shooters or a shooting sequence or, you know, what happened from a tactical detail if you can't get a clear picture of what the wounds were, if you can't, you know, if you can't get how many wounds, exactly where, that's what's considered best evidence most of the time in a murder
sure.
case. And if the best evidence is unclear, then you're left hanging. It was when the Records Review Board, and this is documented in interviews and on tapes, actually sat down with the autopsy doctors, you would expect for an autopsy of this nature that you'd have a very concrete record. All the
right.
all the photographs would be labeled, there would be markers showing entry and exit, and you know there really wouldn't be any question about it. And they started
right.
going through the photos and x-rays, and the doctors themselves could not clearly explain certain things in the pictures. They would make remarks about, well, you know, this was in our report, and I know we had pictures taken of it, but they don't seem to be here. Well,
uh-huh.
that's just not right. That's not what you expect. And interestingly, one of the doctors is, the lead doctor is even quoted as he left the ARB interviewers as making a remark something like, well, I hope all you folks will be able to puzzle this out. Well, okay. this seems like quite a while, a little too late to be puzzling it out to me.
Sure.
But
sure.
that's...
Well,
that,
the...
You know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that's why it makes it so difficult to proceed with the details, the tactical details of who shot from where and how many times, because
okay.
That,
well, one of the questions is it not from the autopsy, which is those records are essentially not available, right?
No, actually, we do have access. We have access. Well, it's interesting. We have access to an autopsy report. However,
okay.
in a detailed study of the chain of possessions, the autopsy doctors now admit that one of them destroyed his notes. One of them has destroyed
right.
the first draft of his autopsy. One of them says
uh-huh.
his notes are simply missing. He doesn't know what happened to them. And the chain of possession seems
oh, Larry,
to indicate...
Can you hear?
Yes, I can. Can you
okay,
hear
we're
me?
Having a little trouble with... Yeah, you're dropping out off and on.
I'm sorry.
One of the doctors... No, it's not your fault. It may be your phone's or maybe Blog Talk Radio's phones. But as long as I'm not dropping out, then I guess it may be your phone. Let's try it again. You were saying about the autopsy notes.
So we have a situation where the first set of autopsy notes were missing, and the doctor says he burned them. Another set of autopsy notes are missing. The first autopsy report itself is missing. The chain of possession suggests that another version of the autopsy report is missing. And when you really get to looking through the details, it looks like the autopsy itself evolved over a period of several days
right.
as more information turned up.
Yeah, and this is unusual, not just because it was the President of the United States, which makes it more unusual, but in most autopsies, in terms of a report, it's done, it's available, it's over. They don't, forgive me, play games like this with burning notes. Who would burn autopsy notes unless asked to do so by a government official?
The excuse was, well, perhaps they would, you know, they had blood on them, and perhaps they would end up as being some kind of a souvenir. And, you know, that's,
yeah.
government documents
bizarre.
Just aren't supposed to be handled that way.
Right, Right. And the questions about the autopsy have to do with entrance and exit wounds, correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay. And the reason... Go ahead.
Well, and where the location of the wound, the size of the wound. We basically, almost everything about the autopsy at this point has been brought into question. One of the things that comes out is, for example, the doctors at Parkland, several of the doctors at Parkland, I've sat down and I've seen a doctor at Parkland who did the emergency treatment on the president, and we showed him the pictures from the autopsy, and he actually signed one of them literally saying, "This is not what I saw."
Uh-huh.
And when you have that kind of conflict between doctors who did the emergency treatment and what is now in the archives, you have to become a bit skeptical.
Sure. And in terms of the entrance and exit and size of the wounds, let me make a statement of what I think is fact, and you can correct it. One of the reasons that's important is because if the entry wound was in front and the exit wound is in the back of the neck, that obviously suggests the bullet came from the front. If there's an entry wound in the back and an exit wound in the front, clearly the bullet came from somewhere else. And if there are entry wounds and exit wounds from more than one direction, that really identifies that there was more than one shooter.
Absolutely.
And
it appears most of the doctors, several of the doctors in Dallas, described a small wound of entry in the front. One of them did a television interview actually pointing to the forehead. And again, in that case, it's a fascinating thing. That interview was broadcast. It was reported. A friend of mine who actually co-authored my first book did an article on it because she interviewed him. And then when she looked at her article the next morning, she saw her wording had been changed. And she was really worried because that's, you know, okay, this end of my career. And she called up her editor, and basically he explained to her that if she wanted to know why her wording had been tweaked to make it less certain that it was from the front, she needed to go to the FBI.
Wow. So the FBI had gotten to the editor in some fashion.
It looks like that, as we talked about last week, by that evening there were calls coming from Washington literally saying that you will not pursue a conspiracy. You have the person at hand, book him, charge him, we're done. And interestingly enough, we know from the autopsy doctors, one more of the autopsy doctors have been told that before they started the autopsy, they were literally briefed on that there had been shots from the rear, and you don't do that. I mean, an autopsy is supposed to be objective. You don't tell them what you want them to find.
Right, and the same thing is, of course, true, was extended to the Warren Commission in the sense that Johnson told both Warren and at least one other member of the commission, Richard Russell, that you need to go ahead and determine that this Oswald was just the only guy who did it, because otherwise we could have World War III if it turns out Russia or Cuba was involved.
That's absolutely correct. And there's,
yeah.
I mean, we have that documented. There's no question about that anymore.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's reported in every historical treatment about how Johnson directed that. And there were a number of people on the commission who were only too happy to comply.
And just to add one more element about that, the doctor's interview in Dallas, the Warren Commission itself was, I mean, that's a very sticky point. If you have one of the first doctors saying, well, you know, I saw an entry wound, the Warren Commission asked the Secret Service to get the videotape because it had been broadcast, because they'd like to look at his, you know, or give them a transcript. And the Secret Service told the Warren Commission they were sorry they couldn't find it. Well, the ARRB... found it, and actually found that at the time the Secret Service was telling the Warren Commission that they had it.
Right.
They had collected the videotape and they had a copy of the transcript. So a key part of this is certain people just not providing information.
Sure. And in fact, the FBI was a little bit reticent to cooperate with the Warren Commission as well, right?
And the Warren Commission, we even have notes from the Warren Commission itself where the commissioners, in several cases, the commissioners actually go off record because they're discussing something they don't want reported. But in one case, they are actually talking about the fact that they know that they're at J. Edgar Hoover's mercy. And if Lee Harvey Oswald was an FBI informant, they know Hoover would never tell them. So the Warren Commission itself knew that it was being screened from information.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, because the country had and the world had to be protected. Before we get too close to the edge of the time, give us your website again so people can take a look at the book and even order it if they're so inclined.
Sure, it's www.larry-hancock.com.
Okay, and I commend you to look at that site if you're listening to this and take a look. Obviously, Larry's is not the only book ever written on the assassination, but you will be able to delve into this information more deeply in the book than obviously we can cover in 30 minutes, or in this case, an hour since we've done it twice, of radio time. For one thing, you wouldn't hear me talking and interrupting.
I'm sorry, if I could just add one more thing to kind of wrap up that the autopsy thing as to why we would be skeptical.
Yeah.
And I think this is a perfect example. We know that in several cases, the Warren Commission actually convened panels to look at the evidence,
right.
And these were expert panels. Well, I'm sure some people have heard of the magic bullet and the point that there was. The Warren Commission came up with a shooting scenario that seems a bit improbable, but they actually convened an Army ballistics panel. The best wound experts out of the Army. They set them down. They had a panel. The panel not only reviewed the films of the shooting, but they did their own test and literally came back with a formal report that said, no, there is no way. That bullet did not do that. The bullet did not do what you said. And and you've got a signatures from 12 experts that say that, and one committee member, a staff member, said, well, thank you, but you guys must be wrong. Too bad.
Well, and let me just amplify that. The issue of that magic bullet is that in order for there only to have been one shooter, one bullet would have had to have done not only a large amount of damage to two people's bodies, but would have had to have changed direction and in midair. And additionally, there was less lead missing from that bullet than was still in Governor Connally's wrist.
Yes, indeed.
Right? Okay. Okay, good. That happens so rarely. Thank you. You want to say that again?
He's right all the time, folks.
Yeah, there you go. The other question I was going to ask you is, tell us what we now know, that we didn't know in 1963, 64, 65, about Jack Ruby.
Ah, yes. Well, one thing that certainly wasn't known at the time of his trial, one of the basic elements of his trial and of his plea was that he had been so mentally stricken by the wounding. He had been such a fan of the Kennedys and Jack and Jackie that he actually, his alibi was that he killed Oswald so that Jackie wouldn't have to come back to Dallas to be at a trial. The problem is that we now know now that he told his second trial lawyer that alibi had been made up by his first trial lawyer.
Right.
So we know that really wasn't Jack's motive. We also have a very interesting informant report that was withheld at the time. Essentially, Jack called up one of his friends and said, if you want to see some fireworks, come down to the plaza today.
Now, that was before the assassination?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
So that sort of casts some doubt on his lack of pre-knowledge. There are a lot of things that we know like that are quite incriminating and would suggest that Ruby himself was very much involved in the plot. That he we have detailed evidence that he was literally stalking Oswald over the 36 hours before he killed him, which gets to be pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I remember a number of years ago reading that Ruby knew Oswald, and that a number of the conspirators who, primarily the Watergate gang, pre-Watergate, had actually met in the Carousel Club, which was Ruby's nightclub in New Orleans. Or Dallas, rather.
Dallas. That rumor was circulating quite widely. There were a lot of people that seemed to know that Jack had something to hide. You know, that I don't think there was much doubt about that. I one kind of fascinating story that many people may not have read that is fairly has only become known recently, though, would have implicated Ruby along with Oswald, and that is the fact that a couple of days before the shooting, a man picked up a hitchhiker right in Oswald's neighborhood near his rooming house. He was asked him to drive and drop him off at the school book depository, which he did. The fellow was carrying a long package. He talked about JFK's visit to Dallas, but the interesting thing is he opened up his conversation by asking the driver if he'd ever spent much time at the Carousel Club, which was Ruby's nightclub. Now, this story was verified by the FBI. He had told, the fellow had told several people he worked with about it before the assassination, and he even passed a polygraph test. But essentially, when it was all over, the FBI told him he had to be mistaken because Oswald was at work that day. Well, the great likelihood is that someone, there are several instances of someone impersonating Oswald, and it looks like in this case they were setting up both Oswald. They were actually setting up Oswald with Ruby. And as you remember last time we talked about John Martino and the fact that after the assassination, many of the stories that were planted involved both Oswald and Ruby as being in the pay of Castro.
Yeah, which is obviously false.
True.
Yeah, and on the wrong side of the political spectrum besides. We just have a few minutes left. Let me remind everybody that the website where you can take a look at Larry's book is larry-hancock.com. I remember, I don't know if you remember seeing this, you've probably run across it because obviously you've done an enormous amount of research. And also when I was looking at a lot of this stuff, I was, you know, relatively speaking, a kid, now that I'm an old guy. There was somebody, when everybody believed, not everybody, but when a lot of people believed the official story, there was a theory that was posited by some psychiatrist that said the reason Ruby killed Oswald was because Ruby had had a strong homosexual attraction to Jack Kennedy. Which is, I'm sorry, a little odd.
Yes.
That's a little odd.
That's quite odd. If there is some reason to suspect that Jack might have been bisexual, in all honesty, but all of that is pretty speculative. And to be honest, it is quite a well-known fact that Jack did have girlfriends, and quite a bit of evidence has turned up about very specific girlfriends. So, and this was at that during that period of time. So, well, I guess one of the things I would contribute to the psychologist, if he'd had that sort of fixation, wouldn't it have been logical that he would have at least gone to watch the motorcade to see Jack, which he did not, by the way.
Yeah,
so that always kind of weakened his alibi about even being a Kennedy fan. It's sort of like, well, the motorcade was coming down Main Street, your club's on Main Street, yet you say, even though you knew about it, you were two blocks away putting an ad in a newspaper. You know, how interested could you have been?
We have a little over a minute left. As usual, there's too little time. I would like to have you back, and we'll talk about scheduling when we're not on, so that we can get back together. If you don't mind, I'd love to have another conversation with you.
Happy to do it.
Okay, terrific. And actually, we have 90 seconds left, according to the voice that I just heard in my ear that you did not. And it's a very annoying recording. It's not actually a human. But anyway, maybe she was once. But this, besides the fact this is a fascinating subject, and I hope the rest of the audience feels as I do about it, because it is a very interesting subject, in part because if this could happen once, as a result of a conspiracy of people who are trying to change government policy, which is really what this was, it was a form of coup, it can happen again. And that, you know, and I assume you feel the same way.
And that's one of the reasons why many of us pursue it, because we don't think it's irrelevant at all to the way things still happen.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I am going to let Larry go. We have about 40 seconds left. Larry, thank you again. It's been great. I wish the phone thing had been working better so we could have spent more time. But we'll definitely do it again. And before that show is on, you members of the audience will be made aware of it. And looking at my schedule, I see we're probably about 4 weeks out. But if you're available in March sometime, we will do that. I will drop you a note.
Sounds great. Thank you, sir. I enjoyed it.
All right. Larry, thank you very much. Take care. And that about does it for the show. We have 10 seconds left, so let me thank you again for joining us. We'd be flattered if you did it again next week. We have a city councilman who they tried to bar from taking office because he's an atheist. Thanks. See you then.